Thank you, Philip. Thank you, everyone, for coming tonight. I hope you benefit from what I have to say over the next few weeks about money. I have got a confession to make. I absolutely love money. I spend many hours each day thinking about money. That is my job. I am paid to think about money and how money works. And I'm fascinated by this stuff. In fact, I even collect money, as you will see in a minute. So let's think a little bit about money. What did our ancestors use for money? Well, here's some of the things that our ancestors used. Sheep was a very common form of money. So anyone who's well versed in the Old Testament, you'll read lots about sheep in the Old Testament. They were very precious because they were used as a form of money to buy and sell things. And in the Greek language, there's an old word for sheep called drachma. That actually was the Greek currency. Okay. In English, we've got a word pecuniary. So we've got pecuniary rewards and non-pecuniary rewards. So pecuniary rewards do with a monetary reward. A non-pecuniary reward is to do with non-monetary rewards. And that comes from a Latin word, pecus, which means cattle and sheep, because that's what our ancestors used for money, cows and sheep. Rupee, the Indian currency, comes from an old Hindi word, rupa, which means cow. Okay. And you've often wondered, why do the Americans call the dollar the buck? You know, you go to America and you hear Americans talking about the buck. You can get a cup of coffee for a buck or for a dollar. Why do they call it a buck? Well, in America 400 or 500 years ago, they used buckskins as a form of money. This is the way people trade it. So if you were going to your local spar shop, you would have used buckskins. Okay? So that's what our ancestors used. But lots of our ancestors also used coins. And coinage has been around for 2,700 years, or thereabouts. And in fact, you read in the New Testament a lot about coins. Jesus talked a lot about coins and money in the New Testament. And in fact, you can go to the British Museum, and there's a little room in the British Museum that has a display of all the coins that were circulating in Jesus' time. Fascinating little display. Our ancestors also used money. And so when I said I collected money, I wasn't joking. I do collect money. I collect old banknotes. So this is an old banknote from 1943. It's from my late father-in-law's back pocket. He found it one day, and I now own it. I've got several other very old notes. And so our ancestors have used these. Notes have been around from about 1100 AD. The Chinese essentially invented these types of money. And we also got very fancy money today. This little piece of kit here is going to revolutionize money. You just attach that to your iPad, to your smartphone, and that's how you can pay for things in future. That's the future of money. We're not going to be using cash very much. We're not going to be using notes and coins. We're going to be using this little gizmo here. And in fact, one of the people behind the development of this little gizmo is from Sion Mills in County Tyrone. Okay. So that's something that's the future of money. So when we talk about money, we think about what we use to trade, what we use to buy things when you go to the shop. But we also use money in another sense. When we're thinking about how wealthy someone is. So if someone has died and the question asks, how much money did he leave? Or if you want to know how wealthy someone is, how much money does that person have? So we use money in that sense also to talk about someone's wealth. And that's the way we want to think about it over the next number of weeks. So tonight I'm going to talk very briefly about investment. Okay, and investment is for people who have money. Then I'm going to talk about debt next week. And debt is for people maybe who don't have enough money and need to borrow. Okay? And we're going to think about debt, whether it's a good thing, bad thing, how to go about it. And then in our final week, we're going to think about people who don't have any money. Poverty. Okay? And what's our response to poverty? Why does it happen? How common is it? Etc., etc. So that's tonight. Think about investment. Okay? And I have two questions. And then I have two pieces of advice. So the first question is this. What is investment? What do we mean by investment? Second question, how should we go about investing? Okay. And then two pieces of advice. Dangers to be avoided. And finally, I want to tell you, let you into a secret, the best investment. Okay, I've spent years studying this stuff, the best investment. So I'm going to save that to the end. So what is investment? What do we mean by investment? Well, the technical definition of investment is postponed consumption. Let me explain what we mean by that. So here you are today, here's your income, and here's your spending, and you spend all your income. That's today. But you look out into the future, into next year, the year after, maybe 10 years down the line, and you see potentially in the future that your income is going to be less than your spending. And you can't really reduce that spending. You've got a bit of a problem. How are you going to manage this? So what you will do today is you'll say to yourself, okay, maybe I could not spend as much today and try and allocate that out into the future. Try and put that aside for some future event. So we'll take this little bit here, the green bit. We'll not spend it today. We'll put it aside and we'll move it over and eventually we'll spend it out into the future. That's all investment is. So it's taking consumption from today and deciding we're not going to consume it, we're going to keep it, and we're going to put it out into the future. Okay? That's all investment is. So take this little bit of income from today, we don't spend it, instead we put it out into the future. Okay? We put it aside. That's all investment actually is. Now why might we have this scenario here where future spending is greater than our income? Well, retirement. Okay, so when we look out in the future, we're going to retire. We're going to have spending. Our spending may go up for various reasons to do with our health, etc. But our income's going to fall. So we need to save money or invest now so that we have something in the future. We may anticipate a job loss or a pay cut. You may be working in an industry and you can see the writing on the wall of that industry. Okay, so for example, people who work for Kodak. Kodak was one of the most successful firms in the world for over 100 years. And then along comes the digital camera. And that's the end of Kodak. And many people who worked for Kodak saw the writing on the wall for 5 or 6 years. And they were therefore preparing for that future. Children. Okay, some people told me, you know, having a wife, that can be, you know, increase your future spending a lot. Children. Here are the figures from the Northern Ireland Statistics Agency. How much it costs to rear a child until they're 21. We're talking roughly £250,000. Okay, that's actually up quite significantly from 2003. That's mainly been driven by the cost of going to university, the cost of higher education for families today. Children are very, very expensive. And so if you're going to have children, you need to shift some of your consumption out into the future. And the Bible, of course, encourages this. We're told in Proverbs 13 that a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. So it's not just about storing up money, storing up consumption for our children. It's about for our children's children. Okay, so that's another reason to invest, another reason to save. There may be changes in government policy. We live in a society where we have what's known as cradle-to-grave protection by the government. From when we're born until we die, the government looks after us. So we've got essentially free education, we've got free healthcare. But as you look out into the future and you ask yourself, are we always going to have that? So 10 years ago, 15 years ago, some of you may have been parents and you're looking out in the future and you're not really totally aware that universities are going to start charging a lot more money in terms of fees. And many parents weren't aware of that. Okay, and it's always about looking to the future and thinking what possibly could happen. And of course there could be rainy days. And in Joseph in the book of Exodus, he was able to interpret Pharaoh's dream, and Pharaoh saw the 7 good years and the 7 bad years. And Joseph said, Pharaoh, you need to invest. You need to take some of this stuff from the good years and you need to save it up for the bad years, for the rainy days. None of us know what's around the corner. We need to save up. We need to invest for those rainy days. Now, some people may come along at this point and say, okay, is this not a lack of faith? Will God not provide in the future? So therefore, we don't have to worry about it. Okay, I have two responses to that type of objection. The first response is that it actually takes a lot of faith to invest. Because as we'll see in a minute, that money that you save up for the future can disappear. Things can happen to it. So it actually takes faith to invest. The second thing, and maybe the more important thing, is that God actually makes us responsible for this decision. He makes us responsible for caring for our families, for our offspring, and even for our children's children. So we're given that responsibility by God, and it would be reckless of us not to make that. Okay. So, what is investment? Now let's think very briefly about how to invest. How do you go about it? Okay. So we've established we need to invest, if we can. How do we go about it? And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give you two choices. Okay. Here's choice one. You take your money from today, you're going to need it in a few years' time, and you put it under your mattress. Okay. Or you put it in a tin in your kitchen, Karen. Jack. My family obviously need this lesson tonight. So this is the option. Put it under your bed. Okay, is this a good choice? Well, okay, of course, this could be stolen. Your house could burn down. You know, there's various things that could happen. It, but there's even something more fundamental could happen. It. Okay, so let's go back to 1900. It's a long way to go back, but my grandfather was born in 1900, and let's assume that his parents decided to give him, his name was David, we're going to give you £100 on his birth. And you're going to give this to your grandchildren when they're 43. Okay. And so my grandfather puts that £100 under his mattress. And £100 in 1900 is a lot of money. In 1900, that would have been the wages for the year for a labouring man. It would have fed a family of four for 1 year. £100 in 1900 was a lot of money. So we shoot forward until today. How much is that worth? Well, it's still £100. But in terms of what it could buy in 1900, it can only buy £1.09. It can only feed a family of four for less than 1 week. So my grandfather thinks in 1900, he's been given this £100. This is great for my grandson John. He's going to have a lot of money. He's going to be able to feed his family for a whole year. But we get to 2014 and it's essentially not worth very much. What's happened? Well, what's happened is inflation. Okay? And inflation is very simple to understand. This is whereby governments print too much money, mint too many coins, and that means they lose value each year. So inflation this year is roughly about 1.5%. That means the pound in your pocket will buy 1.5% less stuff at the end of the year than it did at the start of the year. And you keep doing that year on, year on, year on. This is what happens. You get money losing value. So this is a really bad option to save. This is not how you go about investing. You don't put it in a tin in the kitchen and store it up. Okay? Let's even go back to 1971, when I was born. Many of you probably can remember this, Daniel. A loaf of bread in 1971 cost 9p. Can anyone remember that? No one wants to admit. But that's what a loaf of bread cost in 1971. You go into a shop today, you'll pay a pound or over a pound for a loaf of bread. Why has that happened? Money has lost value. It's not that bread's become more expensive. Money's just simply lost value. And it's lost a lot of value between 1971 and today. So if we adjust this 9p using the retail price index, which is a measure of inflation, we find it's worth £1 today. So money has lost value. And in fact, in some places, you can get money losing value altogether. Early 1920s, after World War I, in Germany, the German government started printing money like there was no tomorrow. And they started printing million mark notes. And in fact, it was so bad that laborers had to be paid twice a day because money was losing value that quickly. And they would be paid with a wheelbarrow. So they'd take a wheelbarrow to work and they'd put the money into the wheelbarrow and they'd wheel it home and their wives would run out and try and spend the money as quickly as they could. Okay. And it eventually got so worthless that here, this lady, she's using it. This is a picture from the archives. She's using it just to light her fire, her stove. This man is just wallpapering his wall with it. These kids are playing, this is their building blocks. It became worthless. So this is something known as hyperinflation. And different places around the world can experience hyperinflation. Now, I don't think we will experience it. I can't guarantee that. But this is a really bad thing. If you lived in Israel in the 1980s, you experienced this. If you lived in Argentina in the 1990s, you experienced something like this. If you lived in Zimbabwe, again, this is from my collection. I met a Zimbabwean in Manchester, and he tried to bribe me. He gave me this $100 trillion note. I thought I was really rich. But it's worthless. The same gentleman told me that shops in Zimbabwe were closing 3 and 4 times a day to adjust their prices. It was crazy. And this is actually the inflation rate in Zimbabwe in December 2008. So money was losing value at that rate. That's actually 6.5 gugols for anyone who's really into maths. That's a lot of problems. So, choice one, do we put it under the bed? No. That's not a good choice. So the only other choice that most of us have, I say most of us because there are some exceptions, but most of us have, is to use something called the financial system. And you're probably thinking it's probably just as bad as just putting it on your bed, but maybe not. Let's see. So here we are. We want to save this money for 10 years' time, for 5 years' time. We put it in the financial system. Now, what does the financial system actually do with that money? So when we put money into the financial system, what happens? Well, they lend it to governments. Okay, so governments borrow lots of money. The British government borrows lots and lots of money. Where does it get it from? It gets it from us. Okay. Businesses borrow money. Farmers borrow money. Okay. It's an annual cycle in farming. You borrow money. Okay, and then you repay it when the crops come in, and then you borrow again to plant, and that's what happens. That's what businesses do. Households borrow. They borrow to buy houses, to buy homes. Okay, so when you put your money into the financial system, that's what's happening with it. Okay. So what is the financial system? Okay, so what sort of things can we invest in? Well, we can go for these sorts of things. Banks, building societies, credit unions. There's a credit union in Kalibaki. I think is it Tuesday or Thursday night it's open? Just down on the right-hand side at the Orange Hall. There's one in Ballymena as well. Post office, you can save at the post office, friendly societies. These are great ways of saving. Let me tell you some of the advantages of these. You can access your money relatively quickly and easily. So you find out you need the money, you're saving it, you need some of it, you can go in, you can get it. That's no problem. It's relatively risk-free. Okay. Yes, banks can collapse, but governments typically don't let them. Okay. So, you know, you've all your money in the bank, you could lose it. Theoretically, you could lose it, but governments typically don't let that happen. And a lot of savings accounts can be tax-free. So if you're saving in a savings account, make sure if you're a taxpayer that you're getting a savings account that's tax-free, something like an ISA, an individual savings account. Okay. That's some of the advantages. Some of the disadvantages. Okay, you can access your money quickly and easily. That is also a disadvantage. If you're like me and crisps are in your house, you will eat them. Well, that's what I do. If the crisps are not in the house, I won't eat them. So it is when we save money. If you're the sort of person who sees something in the shops, see a new gadget, a new pair of shoes, and then you dip into your bank account, your savings account, and you take the money out to buy the new pair, which you don't really need. That can be a disadvantage. So you might want to think about a savings account that sort of keeps you away from your money. Okay, if you're that sort of person. Savings accounts can give you very low returns, and that's particularly the case at the minute. So if you have a savings account, and have had one for the past 6 years, you've actually been losing money on it. Because the interest that you're being paid on is so low, it's actually lower than inflation. So every year, you're actually losing money on it. Okay, so that's a bit of a problem. How long is that going to last for? It may last for another 5-6 years. It may go away next year. Who knows? But that's the state of the world that we've had for the past 6 years. Not great for savers. Okay. That's one way of doing it, one way of investing. Some people then say, okay, is charging interest not wrong? Because when you go to a bank, to a building society, to a credit union, you're giving your money to the financial system, to the bank, to the credit union. They're lending it to somebody, they're charging interest, and you're getting some of that interest back as a saver. Is that not wrong? Does the Bible not say that interest is wrong? Well, a couple of verses from the Old Testament might sort of lead us to think that. Let's look at Leviticus 25:37. You shall not lend him your money at interest. Exodus 22:25. If you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like a moneylender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him. And so on the basis of verses like this, the church for 1,600 years essentially believed that the charging of interest was wrong. Okay? That's the belief of the church. But these verses are not actually talking about lending money at interest to anyone. They're talking about lending money at interest to your brothers and sisters. This is God's family. Israel was God's family. And people were lending to their brothers and taking advantage of them, particularly poor people. And so the law had all of these provisions to protect poor people, to prevent them from being abused by the wealthy. And the whole idea behind the law is that you're meant to help your brothers when they're in need, your brothers and sisters. You don't lend them to make money, you just help them out. Okay? And in the New Testament, we see Jesus, he tells this parable about talents, and he gives money in the story, money's given to three men, these talents, and they're told, go away and invest it. And two go away and invest it, they do quite well. The other, he basically says that this guy's a really tough guy, I'm just going to put it under the mattress. Bury it in the ground, which is what he did. And then the man came back and said, why didn't you give it to the bankers that I might have got some interest? And so Jesus here is saying, it's okay to lend. It's okay to charge interest. He's saying banking is okay, it's legitimate. And so with the Reformation, we get a switch away from no, you can't lend, you can't borrow, interest, charging interest wrong, to this, what we have today, that charging interest is okay. Next week we're going to be thinking about what happens when people charge too much interest and take advantage of people. And we're going to see next week that is a big, big problem in our country today and in our society today. Okay, what else could you do? Well, you could go to the bank's billing site. You can also go and lend money directly to the government. Governments issue bonds. Okay, they borrow from their citizens. So you can go to a post office and do this. You can go to a bank and do this. You can go to a billing society and do this. This is particularly the case during times of war. So here's a poster from the First World War. This poster is encouraging people to support the war effort by lending money to the government. So you can put your savings to good use. Help beat the Germans, essentially. Okay? So you can do that, or you can go to the stock market and you can invest in shares. So here's a company, BT, we all use it. Okay, if you use a phone at all, you're basically, BT's getting some of the money from it. Today you could go out and buy one share in BT at £3.86. And when you've got one share in BT, that means you own a very small part of the company. You are one of the owners. Okay, you own a very small, small sliver of the company. And each year, that company produces profits, and BT's dividend at the minute is 10% per share. So for every share you get, you'll get 10 pence per share. Okay, that's giving you a return at, about 2.6% per annum, which is above what you're going to get in the bank or building society. And of course, that share price can go up, it can also go down. And what's going to drive that share price up, what's going to drive it down, is going to be the change in the dividend, essentially. So if the company becomes less profitable, dividends go down, share price goes down. BT, if you invested in BT 6 years ago, you would have paid less than £1 per share for BT. BT's it's been a very successful company over the past 5 or 6 years, with the extension of broadband and BT Vision. Okay, so you could do that. But for most people, that's maybe not possible, so we'll talk about how you might do that in the future. So let's go back to my grandfather again. So in 1900, he gets this £100. He's going to store it up for his grandson called John. And what would that be worth? And what I've done here is I've stripped out inflation. We're assuming inflation hasn't happened. So had he invested it in the stock market, Had he invested in government bonds or had he invested in a bank account, what would have been the return? So had he invested in the bank account three times, that's quite a good return. So £100 turned into £300. Okay. Had he invested in government bonds, £100 turned into £429. But look what happened if he invested in the stock market. The £100 would have turned into £28,000. Okay, so you can see why the stock market is such a good way to invest for some people. Even if we go to 1970, so if I had invested £100 for my son Jack today, what would it be worth today, assuming no inflation? So the £100, had I put it in the bank account, would have doubled. So each year you get interest, and then the interest compounds over time. It's quite a good return. Government bonds would have given you £418, but if I invested in the stock market, I've got over £1,000. Okay. Now, the stock market. For some people, for most people, you shouldn't invest in the stock market because you need some type of expertise. But there are things out there, vehicles out there, to help you. So you go to your bank, your building society, they will have investment trusts, unit trusts. What these vehicles do is they invest in lots of different company shares. They take all the decisions. They're usually very safe companies that they're investing in. It's a good way for people to invest. Okay, so you get some of that nice return that the stock market can develop. It is risky. It is risky. Okay, I'm not going to pretend that it's not. Stock markets can go down. And when you want the money, that could be when the stock market's at its bottom. So that's part of it. Is it gambling? Is the stock market gambling? So some people, when they see risk, they say, aha, gambling. And they equate risk with gambling. But you've seen already option one, putting the money under a bed. There's a lot of risk associated with that. Putting your money in a bank, there's risk associated with that. It can lose value. The bank can collapse. There's risk everywhere. So in the stock market, are you gambling? No. You're becoming a business owner. You're owning part of the business. It's not gambling. Gambling is when you are benefiting at the expense of someone else. Okay, that's essentially what gambling is. Now, you're an owner of the company if you invest in it. So you have to invest ethically. So as a Christian, I have a problem investing in certain types of companies. Companies that sell tobacco, for example, or manufacture tobacco. Companies that manufacture arms, for example. I have a problem investing in certain types of company. And so if you're going to invest in these companies, you've got to make sure that, as a Christian, you make sure that they're ethically sound. Pensions. We talked about the stock market. If you have a pension, the vast bulk of your pension is being invested in the stock market. Okay. And there's two types of pension. Most people have what's known as a defined contribution pension. So if you've got an occupational pension, you're paying in so much each year. What you will get when you retire will depend on how the stock market has performed. The vast bulk of pensions today are like this. Some pensions are defined benefit. My pension currently is defined benefit, so the value of my pension will depend on my final salary. I was told last week that it's not going to no longer depend on my final salary. It's going to depend on my average salary across my 40 whatever years that I work. That probably will change as well. And so they're disappearing. But these are very good ways of saving, because the biggest time when we will have our spending way above our income is when we've retired. And this is the option then that we need to have. So if you're in a job and you can pay a pension, make sure, even if it's a little bit each month, that you're paying into your pension. It's very tax efficient also to do that. Okay, so finally, let's think of some of the dangers to be avoided. So we've thought about what is investment, we've thought about how to invest. Let's think of the dangers. And I've got an ABCD. Okay, let's think about the first one, adoration of money. So you've got all this money, you invest it, does well. There's a danger. Okay? Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes warns us, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. Money doesn't satisfy. I know a millionaire, and his job is to advise billionaires. And I had lunch with him one day. His father was a butcher from I was going to say the Shankill Road, but it's the Craigor Road. His father's a butcher in the Craigor Road. And so a very, very ordinary guy. And he's telling me about all the concerns of these billionaires. And despite having all this money, they're really concerned about everything about in their life. They're concerned about their children. They're just not satisfied. There's a real dissatisfaction there. Okay. Money can't meet our deepest needs. And we know some people misquote this verse. Money is the root of all kinds of evil, but it's not money, it's the love of money. If you adore money, it'll lead you into all sorts of sin. People commit murder. People steal. People do all sorts of things for money. Boasting about money. In Deuteronomy 8:17-18, we're given this warning. Beware lest you say in your heart, my power and my might of my hand have given me this wealth. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the power to get your wealth. So we think we work hard, we get our money, we invest it well, it does well, we think, oh, we've done great. But it's God that gives it. Any money we have, it's God who gives it. So we should not boast about money. Shouldn't adore money, shouldn't boast about it. We shouldn't have confidence in money. And for some people, money is going to do everything for them. Money is going to protect them from danger, from illness. And they're going to build up all this great store of money to protect them from all the bad things that could happen to them, from death itself. And in Psalm 52, see the man who would not make God his refuge, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and sought refuge in his own destruction. It's a very sad thing to trust money. The billionaire lying there ill. The billions of dollars or pounds he has in the bank, they don't do him any good. As he's on his deathbed, those billions and billions of dollars, they do him no good. The only refuge is God. So confidence in money. And then there's the deceitfulness of money. Money can be very deceitful. In Matthew 13, Jesus has this very famous parable called the parable of the sower. And the seed falls amongst, you know, the good ground, the rocky ground. But then there's some that falls amongst thorns. And Jesus said, as for that which was sown amongst thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. So here's a man who hears God's word, who's in a sense, beginning to respond to it, but something chokes him. It's money. It's riches. And wealth has that deceitful power. And Jesus met this rich young ruler one day, and this rich young ruler came to Jesus, what must I do to get into heaven? And Jesus said, go sell all you have, and you'll get into heaven. And we're told that rich young ruler walked away, and he was sad because he had great wealth. His money was deceiving him. His money had a grip on him. And Jesus had read his heart. And it's easier than Jesus said to his disciples how difficult it will be for those who have wealth to enter the kingdom of God. Wealth doesn't stop you entering the kingdom of God in and of itself. It's that love of wealth. It's that deceitfulness attached to wealth. So we thought about investment, what it is, how to invest, the dangers to avoid it. Finally, and very briefly, let me say about the best investment. Okay, how can you become super wealthy? Well, Jesus had quite a lot to say about investment, as we've already seen. But here in the Sermon on the Mount, he tells us something about investment. He's using the language of investment. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. And we could also add where inflation erodes the value. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. He's saying here, forget about your treasures in the Bank of Ireland, in the Bank of England. Put your treasure in the Bank of Heaven. Store up your treasure in the Bank. Now, how do we do that? What does he mean when he says, how can we go about storing up our treasures in heaven? Well, there's two words that Jesus had right at the start of his ministry and at the center of his ministry. Repent and believe. It's turning away from our sin. And it's believing that he died on the cross to pay the price for our sin. That's how we store up treasures in heaven. It's nothing that we do, in a sense. It's believing in his work on the cross, that he died for us. And so he says to us, put your treasure in heaven. in the Bank of Heaven. Forget about the Bank of Ireland, the Bank of England. And he also warns us that we can't serve two masters. And some people try and ride two horses or serve these two masters. They try and serve money. And they try and serve God. You can't do that. It's one or it's the other.